You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, October 19th. My pleasure to be with you. Hope you get over the hump or whatever it is you need to do on a Wednesday. Next hour, I'll have as a guest on the program, Eve Tushnet. Eve has been a guest two or three times before here. I think three times, actually. Eve, who writes several publications, including her own blog. She's also the author of the book Gay and Catholic, as well as her book Amends, a novel, actually. Eve, a former, really, I would say, nominal Jew slash atheist who, while she was at Yale, believe it or not, came into the Catholic faith and has since then continued to write. She's written for The Imaginative Conservative, for First Things, some other publications. Eve is one who continues to identify herself as a lesbian Catholic, but one who is committed to Catholic teaching on the nature of chastity. And so she lives a celibate life as a lesbian woman. So she'll be on the program. She's going to talk about an interesting experience that she had recently, being asked to write a review for a play that was based on a somewhat popular Catholic book, which was in many ways supposed to be kind of a modern reframing of the Screwtape Letters. If you're familiar with the Screwtape Letters, it's the book by C.S. Lewis, very imaginative work in which there is a demon by the name of Screwtape writing to his nephew, I believe it is, Wormwood. And everything is sort of, it's kind of like Bizarro World. Everything is opposite, because from the perspective of the mentor demon, who is trying to mentor a young demon, everything's written from that perspective. So when he talks about the enemy, for example, he's talking about God. And so you have to kind of read it through that sort of reverse mindset. But it's a fascinating piece and has been long a popular one among evangelicals and many Catholics as well. Anyway, this book came out called The Loser Letters, by an author that I really appreciate, Mary Eberstadt, who's written several other things. I will admit to not having read the book, but the loser in question in The Loser Letters is Jesus. And the book written, again, in that sort of style from the perspective of the demonic seeking to undermine the life of virtue. And there was a play put on, I think, at the Catholic University of America about this book, based on this book. And Eve Tushnet was, I guess, asked to review it for a certain website, which she did. And it was a not-so-flattering review. Her primary issue was that the book really caricatured atheists. And her, having formerly been one, I guess she saw that as an unfortunate thing, something that undermines Catholic witness and evangelization, really. Because just as we Catholics don't like to be caricatured, it's not right for us to caricature atheists. So that was kind of the point of her thing. And it got me curious, wanting to have her on the program to talk about this. You know, what are some ways that we do sort of caricature those who are not Catholic, and particularly those who embrace no faith at all? So that'll be my conversation with Eve in the second hour today. If you want to chime in, or if you've got a question, anything like that, you can certainly send it my way at 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Also, today is the Feast of the North American Martyrs. We oftentimes think of St. Jean de Brébeuf and St. Isaac Jogues, two Jesuit priests who were killed by Native American tribes in what was known really as New France. Really, they were killed, I believe, up in northeastern New York. when they are called the North American Martyrs. There were actually 8 Jesuits ultimately who were killed, some somewhat brutally, particularly Jogues and de Brébeuf. And these were men I was not aware of at all, which is kind of remarkable, before I became Catholic. And we'll talk a little bit more about them in the second hour, because the story of their martyrdom, particularly their relentlessness in terms of their mission, their love for those tribes that they encountered, and the painstaking work of linguistics, of trying to be able to learn the language of these Mohawks and Iroquois and so forth, to be able to share the gospel with them. And even though they were brutally tortured and escaped, even going back into the certain maw of death and suffering is pretty remarkable. And we'll talk about that a little bit in the second hour. But certainly we ask for the prayers of the North American martyrs that we may have their courage. We'll also talk a little bit about Flannery O'Connor today, St. Paul's ironic mission, and moving beyond Catholic sprinkles. I have to leave you guessing on that one. If you want to be a part of the program today, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I'll do my best to mention anything. A little bit later, I'll mention a couple of emails that I didn't get to yesterday that came through on our question about favorite cocktails. Anyway, my question of the day, too, in the next segment. Looking forward to today. I get to, after the show, go on a field trip of sorts with my full-time work with the Catholic Diocese of Lexington, where I'm Director of Family Life and Evangelization. Don't be too impressed. I was talking to a group yesterday trying to explain what I do and what my office does. I'm making air quotes there because I get asked that question sometimes. Oh, is that something your office does? You kind of get this, you know, vision of, a group of people running around like clowns in a clown car. busyness. Well, my office is me. Yeah, my office does that. I'll do my best to get to it. That's the realities of working for a small diocese, but I digress. Anyway, we're heading on a field trip, which will be fun, I think, to the Kentucky Holy Land, which is Bardstown, Kentucky, and its vicinities, including something that I cannot believe I have been Catholic now for 11 years, and I still have not been to the Abbey of Gethsemane, the Trappist monastery down there in the Bardstown area. I have plenty of non-Catholic friends, evangelicals, who've been there for prayer retreats and so forth. It's really no excuse that I have not been down there, particularly after reading a couple of years ago Thomas Merton's spiritual autobiography, Seven Story Mountain. Merton, who really made Gethsemane famous in many ways. It was already a great place of prayer and reflection for the Trappists already, but Merton certainly, who mesmerized the Western world, particularly the U.S., with his almost modern version of St. Augustine's Confessions, drew a lot of attention to the Abbey. So I'm looking forward to seeing that today. Should be a good time. I finally found, you got to understand the way it works in my house. I come home with an excellent book. I spend a couple of days reading it, and then for sure that book goes missing. Just does. I mean, it's the nature of our home. We are not an organized lot, my wife and me. It wouldn't take much for you to see that or to know that. We've both taken the Myers-Briggs personality inventory, and you know that whole question of, are you a P or are you a J? That's the last initial, and it usually has something to do with structure, organization, and so forth. Right? I know people who are strong J's. They hang their shirts in their closet by color alphabetically. That sort of thing. My wife and I are both P's. We have typically tested out. Well, early in our marriage, we both tested out on P. Over time, I've drifted a little bit over to Jay. I'm right there on that line between the two. As I like to say, I'm organized in my mind, not so much on the exterior. But as I say, I had to move to a little bit of Jay just for sanity's sake for our marriage and for our family, because my wife's so P, she's Q. Anyway, but what happens in a home like ours is books go missing. But I finally found this one. It's a prayer journal. Actually, my friend Donna at our local Catholic bookstore gave me the heads up on it when he came in as a used book. It's a prayer journal by Flannery O'Connor. Flannery O'Connor, that maestro of Southern Gothic literature who died very, very young. But actually, her written prayers, it's fascinating. I'll get into some of these in the days ahead as I read through it. But I love the prayer. It's from a prayer journal written on the back of the book. This is from Flannery O'Connor, who was a devout Catholic. Dear God, I cannot love thee the way I want to. You are the slim crescent of a moon that I see, and myself is the earth's shadow that keeps me from seeing all the moon. I do not know you, God, because I am in the way. Please help me to push myself aside. That is a powerful image. I cannot love thee the way I want to because I'm in the way. You're the slim crescent of a moon that I see. And I myself am the earth's shadow that keeps me from seeing all of it. What was it St. John the Baptist said? He must increase, I must decrease. We'll be back with the question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Go to breadboxmedia.com and check out all of our different contributors, different personalities, topics, all the rest across this country, every corner, and across the fruited plain. You can check it all out. You can subscribe to your favorite shows, podcasts through Google Play, iTunes, or Podbean. Become a friend of your favorite show. All kind of possibilities. You can just even learn more of what Breadbox Media is about. As I said, one of the cool ideas, I think, that has been developed is this idea of a parish stream. So let's say you're part of a Catholic parish, and you would like more people in your parish to be listening to radio like this, where they're being formed and shaped in their faith, and also provide an opportunity to be a communications hub of sorts. And you can do that by having your own specific parish stream developed to where the commercial breaks would be all your parishes for announcements, bulletin boards, messages from key leaders, your own advertisers, from perhaps vendors that are on the back of your bulletin or others within your parish. Half of the dollars spent on advertising are returned to the parish, so it becomes a way of raising funds as well. It's really a good opportunity. You can even create some of your own programming. There's room for that as well. Again, you could check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Before we get to today's question of the day, I have to confess that I overlooked a couple of responses to yesterday's question of the day on the 240th anniversary of the first cocktail. Couple of comments or emails we got that I missed during the program. Bonnie says her favorite drink is she says, I like a good lemon drop martini, no sugar on the rim. And Mary Lou says her favorite cocktail is a Grey Goose dirty martini, preferably with blue cheese stuffed olives. I'll take your word for it there, Mary Lou. I don't like blue cheese. Anyway, she says, a Kentucky resident, a good old-fashioned in Manhattan would also be near the top of the list. Now, somebody pointed out that, of course, does that question of the day from yesterday does sort of play into the stereotype of Catholics liking to drink a lot. I'm sort of a stereotype buster or caricature buster in that regard, because even though I jokingly say to people the reason I became Catholic was so that I could drink and gamble, I really do very little of either. Not because I'm a goody two-shoes. I never really acquired a taste for alcohol. And I've never had enough money to be able to blow it on gambling, I guess. I will buy the occasional scratch-off, I will admit. Anyway, so that's a caricature of Catholicism. By the way, we Catholics have nothing on the Episcopalians, just to make that clear. And of course, we're not the only drinkers. As the joke goes, the difference between a Catholic and a Baptist is the Catholic will actually speak to you in the liquor store. So I digress. Anyway, my question of the day is, what is the craziest caricature of Catholicism out there? And maybe what's one that has some merit, right? Because we're going to talk about this in the second hour with my guest, Eve Tushnet, in terms of the way we as Catholics caricature others, too, because we're all guilty of it. Certainly on my journey into the Catholic Church, I discovered along the way that many of the caricatures that I had in my mind about Catholicism were not entirely accurate. And bothered me the more I learned and discovered that the unfair ways that Catholics are often depicted or perceived. But once I became Catholic, I also discovered there's plenty of misperceptions and caricatures that exist among us as well, particularly toward Protestant Christians, for example. As I've said before, like the idea that all Protestants are looking for entertainment or warm fuzzies. I think that's unfair. But we also caricature atheists, and that's what we're going to talk about with Eve Tushnet in the second hour today. The way that we caricature them, and sometimes in some of our evangelical art, for example, some of these movies like God's Not Dead, but also as Catholics, we sometimes do as well. And to really have dialogue with somebody and to really treat someone with the dignity of who they are as a person means to push beyond caricatures. And that I think it's true of when we think about Islam, when we talk about atheists, you name it. Let people speak from their own perspective, try to understand them. So, but that relates to my question today. What is the craziest caricature of Catholicism, and which one has some merit? I will say the craziest one I've ever heard, and I've probably shared this before, but we have a priest in the mountains of eastern Kentucky in Appalachia where there are very, very few Catholics. Still to this day, many counties in our diocese have less than 0.5% of the population Catholic. Some counties, now there are a lot of counties in Kentucky, a lot of small counties. We have 120, which is a huge number for a state our size, but some of them have no Catholic parish at all. So where there's an absence of Catholics, of course, you can expect misunderstandings to abound. And also, most who settled eastern Kentucky, unlike other parts of Kentucky, like Bardstown, where I'm going today, which were settled by those who came down the Ohio River, people oftentimes of French descent, for example, who had Catholic roots. And so that's why the area of Louisville, Bardstown, Owensboro, much more Catholic than eastern Kentucky, because those settlers usually came over the mountains from Virginia, which primarily settled by the English and the Scottish, not known for their great love of Catholicism back since the days after Henry VIII. Anyway, but the craziest caricature I heard was from a priest that I know who's in his 80s, and he's been serving in the mountains there for over 50 years. He said when he first became a priest, maybe 60 years, when he first became a priest down there, he actually encountered people who believed, now get this, that the Catholic priest got the first night with the bride after the wedding. I guess sort of a Catholic a prima nocta, if you ever saw Braveheart. Now that is some pretty cray-cray stuff, as the kids would say. Anyway, so what is the craziest caricature of Catholicism? And which one has some merit? Because we have to be honest and say that sometimes the caricatures of us are not exactly rooted in pure mythology. I mean, we don't do a lot to dispel, for example, the caricature that Catholics like to drink and to gamble when we have our advertising flashing signs for our parish festivals about Texas Hold'em and free beer kiosk, you know what I mean? So, but you know, again, as it is with Catholic Church, we can't win for losing because we're either criticized for being too morally lax or too morally rigid. People can't make up their minds. So anyway, I'd love to hear from you on that. Sports-wise, Cubs fans. Was a billy goat spotted at Chavez Ravine last night? The Dodgers with their second straight shutout win over the Cubs. I mean, this is the team, the Cubs, that have swung monumental bats this year. And getting shut out for the second game in a row by the L.A. Dodgers. I mean, you've already got, I think it's Rick Tellander writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, basically preparing Cubs fans for the worst. Already, you're down 2-1. All you got to do is win one game in L.A., and you're going to get yourself back to Wrigley Field for potentially Game 6 and 7. But this is so it is when you have not won a World Series since 1908, since you've had the Steve Bartman game. But here, Rick Tellander of the Chicago Sun-Times with this headline, "Nightmare finish looms for Cubs." Wow, how quickly they bail. Now, the Dodgers have a drought of their own. I mean, 1988, the last time the Dodgers went to the World Series, let alone won it. For a franchise with the proud history of the Los Angeles Dodgers, that's a pretty remarkable drought, I will say. But nothing like 108 years. Anyway, yeah, here was Rick Tellander's column. If lethargic Cubs don't wake soon, nightmare will become reality. And that'd be a question I'd ask for Cubs fans, by the way, is what's worse? I mean, is it worse as a Cubs fan in all those years of futility? Is it worse to go 70-92 or 65-97 and know that a championship's not even possible and you just sort of enjoy your laughable Cubs? Or is it worse to go 100 and whatever and 50 whatever as you did this year and establish yourself as the dominant elite team in baseball and then to choke in the postseason? That's a tough one. And it ain't over yet, as I said. But, man, if you're a Cubs fan, you got to be a little bit worried. Okay, let's see if we can sneak a What Were You Thinking award in here before the break. Go dumb or go home, as we like to say. Here's a story out of Florida. Evidently, a resident in Florida has been banned from keeping a pet cobra at his home because it got out into the neighborhood. But because of a loophole, because of a loophole, his wife is able to keep one. What? You know, keeping a pet cobra is a bad idea any way you slice it, let alone if you've had the tendency to let it out. Not sure about that loophole and why it exists and why you would keep a pet cobra. Just saying. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. We'll be right back.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show.
Welcome back in. Get my question of the day. What is the craziest caricature you've ever heard of the of Catholics, and which is the...
100%
no. Hold on a second. I got the volume on this... this computer here. There we go. Hopefully it'll stop. Oh, mercy sakes. Anyway, crazy times. What is the craziest caricature of Catholicism, and which one has some merit? Love to hear from you on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. As I said, in the second hour, we're going to talk about caricatures of atheists that we sometimes make as well, that that we need to avoid. Anyway, back to our What Were You Thinking awards of the day, because we've got several. You know, we talked about I think Trevor Bauer of the Cleveland Indians, who cut his finger trying to do basic repairs on his drone. Not a good idea. Well, our second nominee, as we go dumb or go home, is don't attempt to shave your head using a drone. Last week, YouTuber Roman Atwood posted a video in which he attempts to shave the head of a guy named Caleb. In case you're not familiar with his body of work, Atwood is probably best known for a prank video in which he tricked his girlfriend into thinking he blew up their son in a fiery four-wheeler crash. So, you know, you're talking about somebody particularly charming. Anyway, the clippers are not battery operated, so Atwood and his friends rigged up a system where one person holds up the power cord, which is then connected to the drone. The clippers dangle down as Atwood flies the drone toward Caleb's scalp, an attempt to cut his hair and not cause any major bleeding from the head. Now, in Atwood's defense, the video is titled "Never Do This Drone Haircuts," which is, I guess, a little bit like the old, you know, don't try this at home on a closed course with the professional drivers, right? But anyway, but that's essentially, as they say here, the internet equivalent of telling someone not to push the big red button. So just for the sake of our lawyers, select all, the website who posted this, would like to recommend to you, never do this. Why? I can understand a lot of uses for drones, okay? Spying on your neighbors, delivering pizzas, Amazon.com boxes, but shaving, not one that I thought about. But the winner for the What Were You Thinking Award here in this hotly contested election season, this on Atlanta's Channel 11 News. Bus campaigning for Hillary Clinton dumps sewage on Gwinnett County street. Hazmat crews in Gwinnett County, which is Lawrenceville, Georgia, were called to clean up the waste left behind by a Democratic National Committee bus. According to a Lawrenceville Police Department report, officers were called to the O'Reilly Auto Parts after receiving reports that an RV was illegally dumping its sewage into the storm drain. No word if Cousin Eddie in a really short bathrobe was there. An employee of the auto parts store told the responding officer he watched the RV stop in the turn lane and spill raw sewage onto the roadway and into the storm drain. Pictures taken by the store employee showed that the RV, which is really more like a big bus, featured pictures of Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton and her running mate, Tim Kaine. Let me just say, I don't think Mrs. Clinton was on the bus, I don't believe. But it's not exactly the kind of thing you want to do when you're trying to... I mean, even Georgia, I think, in this election is up, is in play. So dumping raw sewage out, not a good move. So we're always open to your nominees for the What Were You Thinking Award. From your own life are always the funniest ones to read, by the way, where we all admit that from time to time we do go home. I mean, we do go dumb and go home at the same time. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. As I said, today, October 19th, the feast day of the North American martyrs, St. Jean de Brébeuf, St. Isaac Jogues, and six others, Jesuits, back in the 1600s who were brutally killed in their attempts to evangelize some of the Iroquois and Huron tribes here in what was known then as New France or French Canada, parts of which, in fact, they died in what's now part of the state of New York, these eight North American martyrs. It's remarkable to me that as someone who grew up here in the United States, I had heard vaguely about St. Augustine, Florida, but most of what I had heard in terms of the early settling of this country and what is this country now was stories of the English, of Jamestown, of Plymouth Rock, and so forth. And I guess it's not surprising in a way because they're... I mean, what victors write history. And so who controlled really the settling and the founding of this country were the British colonies and so forth. And there was a pretty strong strain of anti-Catholicism among the British because of all the centuries since, or the century or so since Henry VIII's fateful decision to break ties with Rome and, of course, the Great Persecution, which was part of the so-called British Reformation. So it shouldn't surprise you that there has been, and continues to be, really, a strain of anti-Catholicism in the American experiment that at times pops its head out from its hole, and you see it for all its ugliness from time to time. It's been called by some the last acceptable American prejudice in some ways. So not surprising, I guess, that it really took me becoming Catholic and going to a conference on Catholic history to really understand the great legacy that we have here on this continent and even in parts of this country from Catholic missionaries who accompanied many of the Catholic explorers and with an idea of bringing the gospel to the heathens, so to speak, as they called them. Now, certainly, I think that language has been overblown in terms of the sense of cultural imperialism that was held by those from Europe, because I think one of the things that happened with people like these Jesuits who ended up being martyred, there was a great sensitivity and a great belief in the innate religious impulse within every human person. And, in the Catholic understanding, of course, you don't have to believe that all other religions, even the pagan ones, are wrong all through, but that even within those, we see shadows of the human impulse for the divine and the desire for truth. And so that bringing the Catholic faith is not therefore coming to destroy or to abolish or to eradicate all pagan beliefs, but to help them see how many of them find their fulfillment in Jesus Christ. And by all accounts, these North American martyrs loved the indigenous people. They loved the Native American people with whom that they encountered. And because of that love, of course, were willing to come and to witness even at great personal risk. So let's talk about, for example, Isaac Jogues, who was one of the North American martyrs. And by the way, there's a shrine to the North American martyrs up near, I think it's Auriesville, New York, which is up sort of in northeastern New York, not far from Albany, New York. Isaac Jogues, Jesuit, born 1607, died at the age of 39 in 1646, was a Jesuit priest, missionary, and martyr who traveled and worked among the Iroquois, Huron, and other populations in North America. He was the first European to name Lake George. He actually called it Lac du Saint-Sacrement. That's my horrible French. Lake of the Blessed Sacrament. In 1646, he was martyred by the Mohawk at their village of Osernanon, south of the Mohawk River. They were all canonized Jogues, Jean de Brébeuf, and six other martyred missionaries, canonized by the Catholic Church in 1930, and they're known as the North American Martyrs. As I said, a shrine is built there for them. He was born in 1607 in Orléans, France, the fifth of nine children. He was educated at home until the age of 10, at which point he began attending Jesuit schools. In 1624, he entered the Jesuit novitiate. There he met his master of novices, who was Louis Lalemant, who would, I believe, also perish. The master, Louis Lalemant, already had two brothers and a nephew serving as missionaries in the colony of New France. The Jesuit community, remember, the Jesuits were pretty new here, maybe, 50, 60 years old since their founding as a part of the Counter-Reformation by St. Ignatius of Loyola. The Jesuit community had a strong missionary spirit, beginning in 1625 with their first mission to New France. And these Jesuit missionaries inspired Jogues. He aspired to follow in their footsteps. We'll talk more about this when we come back from the break. This story needs to be heard. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show
here on Breadbox Media. If you want to respond to our question of the day, which is, what is the craziest caricature of Catholicism that you encounter typically? Is it that we worship Mary? Is it that we have albino assassin monks running around? What is it? Is that we have this organized plot of treachery to take over the world. And then what are maybe caricatures that have some merit? We're going to be talking with Eve Tushnet in the second hour about caricatures that we sometimes have of atheists, for example. So let's talk about caricatures all the way around. 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Talking a little bit today about the North American Martyrs, today their feast day, October 19th. As I said, I was very unaware of the North American Martyrs until I became Catholic and discovered their story and of the price that they paid in their zeal to share the gospel, not in a heavy-handed imperialistic way, but in a tender way, these Jesuits with the native populations here in New France, actually part of which is present-day New York. So we were talking about St. Isaac Jogues, born, of course, in France, entered the Jesuit order. He was evidently inspired by missionaries that had returned to France in 1636, including Father Jean de Brébeuf, Charles Lalemant, and Massey, to venture to New France. I guess the missionaries told Jogues of their hardships, treacheries, and tortures which ordinarily awaited them. But these accounts actually increased Jogues' desire to devote himself to labor there for their conversion and welfare of the natives. Soon after Jogues was ordained a priest in January of 1636, he accepted service in the missions and embarked to New France. He was assigned to be a missionary to the Huron and Algonquian peoples. Both were allies of the French in Quebec. Jogues sailed from France. 8 weeks later, his ship dropped anchor, arriving in Quebec several weeks later. On arrival, he wrote to his mother, "I do not know it is to enter heaven, what it is to enter heaven, but this I know, that it would be difficult to experience in this world a joy more excessive and more overflowing than I felt and setting foot in the new world and celebrating my first Mass, he writes, on the day of visitation. Jogues joined Jean de Brébeuf, the superior of the Jesuit mission, at their settlement in Lake Huron, the village of St. Joseph, on September 11th. Soon upon his arrival, he was stricken by fever, and a similar epidemic broke out among other Jesuits and the natives, people of the village. Due to these things recurring, the Hurons blamed the Black Coats, as they called the Jesuits, threatening to kill them. But Father Brébeuf helped dissuade them from that. And by the following year, relations had improved. And the Black Coats were now being invited into their villages. For years, evidently, Jogues lived in the village of St. Joseph and learned the ways and language of the Hurons. The missionaries accommodated themselves to the customs and food of the savages as much as possible to show the Indians they intended to share their life. I know de Brébeuf was particularly known as a great linguist because learning the indigenous languages was no small feat, as different as they were in their origins from the Latinized European languages of their experience in France. Anyway, they were captured on August 3rd, 1642. Jogues and a group of other Christian Hurons were heading back to Quebec City when they were waylaid by a war party of the Mohawks, part of the Iroquois Confederacy. Jogues allegedly hid in reeds and bushes, but decided to leave his hiding place to join the prisoners so that he could comfort them and ensure them that their faith in Christianity would remain strong. Shortly thereafter, in retaliation for comforting a tortured Frenchman who had just killed a Mohawk, the Mohawk beat Jogues with sticks, tore out his fingernails, then gnawed the ends of his fingers until finger bones were visible. Then they were then taken on a treacherous journey to the Mohawk village, during which worms began to fester in Jogues' wounds. There the villagers turned out in mass and tortured the prisoners by marching them through a gauntlet, which consisted of rows of Iroquois armed with rods and sticks, beating the prisoners walking in single file. Then they lifted them onto an elevated platform where they were mocked, and a captive Algonquin woman then cut off Jogues' thumb. At night, the prisoners were tied spread-eagled in a cabin, and children threw burning coals onto their bodies. 3 days later, they were marched to another village, were run through other gauntlets, and had sticks jabbed into their wounds and sores. And at the third village, Jogues was hung from a wooden plank made of intersecting pieces of wood and nearly lost consciousness until an Iroquois had pity on him and cut him free. Throughout his captivity, he comforted, baptized, heard confession from, and absolved the other prisoners. Now, here's the thing that I want you to know. Jogues actually was liberated from this captivity. A pair of Dutch traders ransomed him and gave the money for his passage from the Hudson to New Amsterdam, which is now New York, and a return to France. He, in fact, was the first Catholic priest to visit Manhattan Island. From there, he sailed back to France. He had to receive a special dispensation from the Pope to celebrate Mass, since he no longer had his index finger and his thumb on one of his hands, which he would have needed to elevate the host. But here's the thing that I think is all the more amazing about St. Isaac Jogues, is that he went back. Even after all that, he went back because of his zeal for the faith. Now, here's the thing that I think, and you can read all about this. This is there's plenty of it online. Read the account of Father Jean de Brébeuf's torture and killing. It's unbelievable. Two things about it, though, that I want to mention. The first is, you know, I think it was after de Brébeuf's killing, after his torture and killing, the natives actually drank his blood because they were so impressed by his resiliency and his resolve in the face of torture. They wanted that strength for themselves and thought it was in his blood. What they didn't recognize is that strength and resolve was, in fact, in blood, but blood of a different sort. The blood that de Brébeuf, that Jogues could have brought them, the very blood of Christ, consecrated, transubstantiated through the miracle of the Eucharist. And what I will say to that as well is, we drink of that same blood ourselves. The same blood that fueled and strengthened the North American martyrs, we partake of every time we say the Amen in Mass. May their courage and intercession be for us a source of strength. The other thing that I want to say, I know there's a lot of debate about this presidential election. There's a lot of social media chatter. There's a lot of discussion. I've been very outspoken about it in terms of my unwillingness to vote for either major party candidate. And I've been criticized by some as trying to keep a, quote, clean conscience while the rest of the country goes to hell, in other words. Because we all know if Hillary Clinton is elected, it's the end of America as we know it, and so forth and so on and so forth and so on. And it's a sad thing to me to see that we've come to a day where we so lightly treat the idea of conscience. But that's where we are. But here's the thing that gets me. Is the thing that I hear constantly is religious freedom, religious freedom, religious freedom. Hillary Clinton is a clear and present danger to our religious freedom. And therefore, we have to vote for someone who, in my view, has disqualified himself from any contention for the so-called pro-life vote. We have to vote for him despite all the issues and problems and ugliness and all those things. We have to vote for him because of our religious liberty. Somehow, I think St. Isaac Jogues and St. Jean de Brébeuf would not be too concerned about our hand-wringing over religious liberty. As I saw someone posted an article that said, I'd rather lose my religious liberty than violate my conscience. Amen and amen. There are more important things than our religious liberty. I'll just say it. What's more important is that we stand in the truth, whatever may come, without fear. As the psalmist says, some trust in chariots, some trust in horses, but we will trust in the name of the Lord our God. North American martyr, St. Isaac Jogues, St. Jean de Brébeuf, pray for us, all of us. This is the Mike Allen Show. We'll be back with the second hour. We'll talk to Eve Tushnet about caricatures of atheists. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.